it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This episode is brought to you by Scene, who we've partnered with to deliver all of our England daily podcasts and videos for the rest of the 2023 World Cup. Starting next week on wisdom.com, Scene will be powering our new interactive videos, allowing you to easily skip to certain segments and find relevant articles, offers and opportunities by simply clicking directly within the video. Hello and welcome to the Wisdom World Cup Daily Podcast. It's 5 defeats from 6 for England at the 2023 World Cup. Nearly a month into the competition, they remain rooted to the bottom of the table. India, on the other hand, continue their march towards the semi-final. Their 100% record is still intact. They won by 100 runs, bowling England out for just 129. I'm Yaz Rana, and with me today is Joe Harmon and Mark Butcher. This feels familiar. Another Sunday afternoon mulling over an England defeat. I think for our sakes, as much as anything, let's start with India. It felt different, Joe, to other England defeats in that they actually did pretty well in the first half. And in the second half, India were totally brilliant, as much as England were not brilliant.
India were magnificent in the field. Slightly loose start. Siraj wasn't quite on the money first up. They made that bowling change. And then the combination of Bumrah and Shami were just electric, with the crowd going absolutely wild. You could hardly hear the commentators at times today. The crowd was so loud. And they were just brilliant, and England had no answer to them. It was almost a bit embarrassing at times, the gulf in class between an India side that were completely on song and an England side that looked completely shot for confidence. And it was a shame because, yeah, as you say, for half the game, England were good in the field. They bowled tidily with admittedly some assistance. They fielded really well. The ground fielding was excellent. A significant improvement on what we've seen in the World Cup so far. Still at the halfway mark, though, you're thinking, that's a lot of runs for this side to chase. And it was only 230. You know, it shouldn't feel like that, but it did. And then sure enough, little opening partnership of 30, and then three wickets for 3 runs. And suddenly, you know it's gone by that point. Mm. But yeah, I think it's fair enough today. We focus quite a lot on England's struggles, as you'd expect, but India were magnificent, and I still can't see how anyone's going to stop them winning this World Cup.
You're right to point out how loud it was during that spell. That was one of my favourite passages of play in the tournament so far. But John Bumrah, what makes him so good? Does he remind you of anyone? He just looks so clearly the standout bowler in the competition.
He doesn't remind me of anybody, actually. I mean, that's one of his great strengths, is that there is nobody I can think of in the history of that. I've seen a few blokes run up like him driving past club grounds on the weekend. but there's no one like him. The control that he has over length, and the pace with which he hits it, the pace with which he hits a length where you're not quite sure whether you ought to be forward or back. The use of his height. He's not a big bloke, actually. I was surprised. I remember
I was surprised when I met him as well. He's a slight guy, isn't
he? Yeah, and the replayed or the sort of the rescheduled end of that England India Test series when he captained the team at Edgbaston. And I was surprised he wasn't much, not much taller than me, and I'm a towering 5 foot ten and a half. But he, you know, at the crease, very short delivery stride, gets very, very high, unbelievably strong wrist that always stays behind the ball. Real flick of that wrist that puts energy on it. And he is just, you know, he must be really disconcerting to face because there is nothing in his approach to the crease or that tells you that the thunderbolts are coming and that it is going to be to hit the bat as hard as it does. To trap you in the crease as in the way that he is able to do. And of course, he's also able to move the ball as well. So all in all, an absolute nightmare. I mean, the only thing I can think of is kind of like, not in terms of the way that he bolt, obviously, again, he's completely original action-wise. But just in terms of that style of bowling where he just pins you to the crease and can do you for pace, has a really good bumper, great Yorkerist. Somebody like Kirtley is one of the great sort of West Indian, you know, albeit height-wise not the same either. But in terms of the mode, the method of pinning you, you know, half and half, can't get forward, can't get back, a little bit of movement both ways, that's kind of what it looks like to me. And just the sheer violence with which the ball hits the stickers of the bat from a good length. He's outrageously good. Perhaps the reason why I thought he might be the leading wicket taker in the tournament, although he's not there. He's not even close. But he might be by the end. They'll play more games than most people, I think. We've already decided.
But it's the fact he always hoovers up wickets, but he also he's got an economy rate of under four for the tournament, and he's bowling in the power play and at the death. It's just ridiculous. They're numbers that we just haven't seen.
Ambrose-esque, isn't it? It's that type of thing. It's a very, very old school economy rate for a new ball bowler who also happens to be pretty sparkling at the end of the innings as well.
And meanwhile, Shami, 9 wickets at an average of 8 in this tournament so far, and couldn't get in the team before.
Only just popped in for a couple of games.
Yeah, wow. I mean, his overall World Cup record is just absurd. 40 wickets at 14 across 3 separate tournaments. And he, as you say, couldn't get in the team at the start of it. Obviously, we've been talking about how good India have been for a while, but I thought this game was a really good illustration, is that they just have so many potential match winners. I mean, with the ball, it's not just Bumrah and Shami. Kuldeep's ball to Butler was sensational. I think it's 7 degrees of turn. There are just no gaps in this side. They're going to take some beating.
Yeah, and actually, I didn't think they batted particularly well today. They beat England by 100 runs and I think left a lot out there with the bat. I think they played shots that they probably wouldn't have played if there was more riding on the game. I think there was an intent to really stamp on England, and that probably led to a couple of loose shots. I'm thinking Kohli doesn't play that shot on zero normally. I don't think he plays that in a high pressure game. Obviously, it's a World Cup game and it's in front of your home fans, but they could lose and it wouldn't have mattered that much today, really. Rahul as well, him and Sharma looked like they were really motoring, and then he played a loose shot. So it could have actually been worse for England today. That's the scary thing.
There is a chink of light there, though, for India's potential opponents come the knockout stages. You know, should they, depending on what they want, if Hardik comes back in, then it kind of solves one or two issues for them. But the length of the tail, obviously, they had Bumrah coming in at 8. Shreyas,
he was 9. Shami 8.
Shami 8. So that they do have a long tail. So if you can stick them in and put them under pressure, knock over early wickets. Shreyas Iyer looks a little bit all at sea up at number 4 at the minute. And so, you know, there is a way through them if you get them doing what they would least prefer to do. Although I think Rohit said that he would have batted today anyway, given that it was a used pitch, and you know, and given how poorly England have chased runs in the tournament, but we decided we fancied chasing against the best bowling attack in the whole thing. And so there are one or two sort of areas where you could say, okay, well there's potential for, you know, you take early wickets, you put them under pressure, you get the likes of Jadeja in with plenty of overs to go, and you do stand the chance of keeping them to something that you could reasonably expect to chase with a batting lineup that's in some modicum of form, as opposed to the bin fire that is our batting at the moment.
Rohit was just majestic again. He's in such good form. I think that there was a feeling that coming into this tournament, he probably wasn't quite the player that he was in 2019, but he certainly looks it the last few matches. Stunning. It was tricky against the new ball, and he got a bit stuck on the crease in David Willey's first over, which I think was a maiden, played and missed it a couple. Next over, just strolls down the wicket and hits him back over his head, then pulls him for six. And he just finds a way. And he said in the post-match interview there that it was quite tricky against the new ball. It didn't look particularly tricky from the way that he was playing.
He might be the best bad wicket player in the world right now. I mean, you think back to, again, go back to England's test series in India. What was that? 22 during COVID, anyway. On pitches when none of the, let's forget England's batting, but none of the rest of his vaunted batting lineup could score a run. He was knocking off hundreds for fun. When the ball's out here at the Oval during the series back in 2020, whatever it was again, then that just before the COVID, back, what was that, 2020? Was it when he made the 100 here in the, 100 yeah. here in the dark? He is a fabulous, fabulous player when the conditions appear to be in the opposition's favour, and not in the way that you'd think back to sort of, you know, David Steele type sort of blocking the crap out of it. He's still able to hit the ball out of the park, play majestic strokes, but seems to is organised enough and has enough sort of mental capacity to kind of ride out movement and sort of forget the last ball and play the next one, which is, you know, something that our guys will kill for right now.
What was the 100 he got? Another test knock when England last toured there. He got a century on the first day. I can't remember the venue now.
Was it Chennai?
I think it was Chennai. And then afterwards it looked impossible to bat on that surface.
Yeah, I mean, he got 160, I think. He might well. It's a big statement because I'm not thinking of a massive sample size here at the moment. But every time I can remember the conditions being very much in the bowler's favour, if there was one guy that stood out and made runs, it was him.
Mm. And he's quite good on good pitches.
I like that with being all right on good ones too.
Back to the Bumrah Shami spell. The most memorable wicket is probably that of Stokes. He fell for a 10 ball duck. Wasn't the prettiest shot in the world. Jamie asks, why do I keep getting told by Morgan and ex-players that we haven't gone hard enough and not attacked enough? It's the exact opposite from what I've watched. Genuinely perplexed by the comments. Can't play conditions, absorb pressure, it's just slog and out. I thought it was quite interesting on commentary because Morgan was saying, he was on commentary when Stokes was out. He said that the ball's doing loads. It's really wet on the outfield. So if you can score a couple of boundaries, that should blunt the India threat in theory. So that the theory was there, but it was just such a wild shot. It was a shot to a different ball. He premeditated. I think he assumed that Shami would hit the sort of hard length.
Outside off
stump.
Yeah.
But that wasn't even close to the ball that was actually bowled.
The whole thing, that whole passage was pretty tough to watch, wasn't it? I mean, again, you go back to the thinking of, if you're thinking that there's going to be dew and that the pitch is going to get easier to score on later, then you suck it up early and then and make your runs later on. You're presuming, given the decision at the toss, that the conditions are going to be not great either way, but they might get better if the dew comes in and makes a difference. But then in the first 10 overs of the game, guys are having a massive swipe. You know, there's no playing for tomorrow. There's no playing for sort of that point come 18, 20 overs where things presumably, or what you've calculated is going to happen, is that they're going to get easier. A batting lineup that's shot to bits. Joe Root was so far across his stump. I don't think he had any idea how far across his stumps he was when he was out at LBW, because otherwise he wouldn't have reviewed it. I mean, the bags are packed and they're on their way back in their heads. But, you know, what was the guy's name who sent that?
Jamie.
Have a listen to the previous one from England's last game. And there's, I have a rant for about a good 3 or 4 minutes about the difference between playing 2020 cricket where the single is something that is given to you, and where in 50 over the single has to be earned or made by the batters because of the difference in the way that fields attack and defend depending on the length of the game. And again, that was pretty much exactly the same thing. You've got a bit of pressure on at the beginning, and England, whilst it's going fine and they're smashing and they're hitting boundaries, all good, great. But then it comes to a complete standstill. Dots everywhere. Cannot get off strike. Can't knock the ball through the field. Infield gets in tighter and tighter. That's the difference between playing very, very short form cricket and 50 over cricket, where the single is actually a very important thing to be able to do and the opposition is not willing to give one to you as it does in the short form game.
I think Stokes' dismissal obviously looks really ugly, but I don't think you can be taken in isolation for that delivery. I take Jamie's point, but I think he did try and kind of absorb some pressure. It was a 10 ball duck.
10 which balls? It's only 10 balls.
I know it's not a huge amount of balls, but he had tried and he was just playing and missing. It looked to me like he was like, well, I'm going to have to play a shot because I can't do it. I'm going to get out otherwise.
I just seem to remember him being none off 60 or something in the great Headingley knock of 2019, you know.
Run rate might have creeped up by that point.
but it still wouldn't have crept up to a point where, you're not going to have to defend for that length of time in a 50-over game. Something will give at that point. The bowlers have to come off. They've only got a limited amount of overs to bowl. Look, I'm not having a go at Ben. I mean, it's symptomatic of England's sort of lack of being able to think their way through the periods where things are not in their favour. You know, the sun is not always shining. In fact, it hasn't done at all when England have batted, you know, or at least they've made it look like it. It isn't always easy that you can just put your foot down and smash the crap out of it.
On Root, Crickley has posted a truly extraordinary stat about Root. So in 18 innings since the 2019 World Cup, Root averages 4.5 in the batting power play. So 18 innings, 50 runs off 132 deliveries, 11 dismissals in that time. That is crazy for a player as good as Root, who's been going okay against the red ball in that time as well. Joe, what do you make of that? That's just so weird for England Premier player to be that short of runs against the new ball.
It is a shock. I mean, there's been a lot of puzzles about England's World Cup campaign, but I think that the two that have puzzled me most are the fact that Chris Wokes suddenly couldn't bowl where he wanted to, which thankfully he was back on the money today, bowled really nicely, and Joe Root. And I didn't think that Wokes would necessarily take stacks of wickets in India, and he might well leak a few, but I thought he'd at least be able to, you know, put the ball where he wants it to, because that's he's made a career out of doing that. And similarly, Root in India has got a really good 50-over record. He's got a brilliant 50-over record overall, and that shot, you just don't see Joe Root do that, really. Kind of falling over, missing it by a margin, and like Butch says, seemingly having no idea where his stumps were at the point of impact. Bairstow should have really just sent him off at that stage, but I think, you know, it's Joe Root, and he wanted to give him every chance, but there was no chance.
And he ran him out in the game before.
Very important context. Yeah, I'd forgot.
That's it for part one. In part two, we'll answer some of your questions.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Sam asks, I know Milan has had a decent World Cup and was unstoppable in that New Zealand series, but in hindsight, should England have tried to bring in someone like Salt or Will Jacks a year in advance to keep the same balance as the side previously had? Butch, we've talked about this before in that England were hamstrung by the schedule. It was quite hard. There wasn't that many, there wasn't that long a time to bed new players in, and Milan did so well. It was understandable why he got in. There wasn't really that much time for someone like Will Jacks to really put forward an unanswerable case. He played that Bangladesh series in the middle order. That's it, I think. But Jacks is quite an interesting one because we were talking about central contracts the other day. 29 players have got contracts. Will Jacks is someone who's played all three formats for England the last year. He gets deals all around the world, yet he's not one of the 29 players, which seems perplexing.
That blew my mind, actually, because I had completely overlooked it on that list, because I just assumed that given the reasoning behind giving multi-year contracts being that you're trying to, you know, to offer players some security and give them the opportunity not to go off and play in other tournaments and turn their back on England, that he would be the guy that would get one. So we had this conversation after recording the last pod after England's debacle against Sri Lanka. I'm very surprised about that. I mean, I don't think, you know, again, England had no idea really, as to who the people pushing or who the people might have been to have pushed themselves into this 50-over World Cup in the lead up to it, because they hadn't played any damn cricket, you know, whether, and not just domestically, but just hadn't played any ODIs really. And the ones that were played were so low key and so kind of, you know, so lacking in any sort of intensity that nothing was really taken from them. But I mean, it's a decent argument. It's a massively in hindsight one. I think Milan's probably the only guy who's looked half decent in the entire batting lineup.
Lovely, so, 16 today before it all went wrong.
I mean, he made 100, and he's got, you know, there's guys that kill for the run aggregate that he's got in the tournament so far.
Yeah.
But that's a conversation. That's a wider conversation. That's less about sort of a replacement for one player or another. It's a little bit more like, it's just a little bit more about, you know, the pool that was available to be picked from was made very, very small by the fact that they hadn't played any damn meaningful cricket, 50 over cricket. And so somebody like Will Jacks missed out. And the thing is, at the top of the order, England weren't massively sort of struggling for options anyway. It's kind of that's not been the issue.
There was controversy around Jason Roy not getting picked. So the idea that England should have thought not Jason Roy, not Milan, and it should have been Jacks, that would have seemed pretty wild thinking at the time. That would have been one hell of a punt. And, you know, it might have come off, but there'd have been understandable criticism of that decision
at the
time.
Looking down again, you look down the list of players available, and again, the only point of contention when the squad came out for me was the three left armers and the lack of a genuine kind of middle overs bowler. And the rest of it, you kind of went, yeah, okay, I don't have much of an issue with that. And again, I don't think there's not a single person I can remember listening to or hearing that thought that England would not make the semi-finals given the squad that was picked, regardless of the fact that there may well have been, you know, one or two things that you could sort of flag up and say, well, perhaps they should have done this instead. They still had enough quality and experience to have played 100% better than they had.
I think we all had concerns about the bowling attack.
Yep.
But I don't think anyone foresaw what would happen to this batting lineup. And it is just mad and you know, unexplainable, really. And now, again, I think there's shock every time Harry Brooks not in the side. And I was fully expecting him to play today. And then you look that Liam Livingstone bowls four overs. I understand they wanted plenty of spin options because the ball was going to turn on that surface. But I'd have thought that Rashid, Moeen and a bit of Root would have been plenty.
Isn't that amusing? You know, you mentioned Joe Root and his bowling there. People are often sort of like, you know, when we have these arguments about who England's spinners should be in test matches and whatever, say, oh, well, you know, Joe Root can do it. People are more than happy for Joe Root to be sort of like a frontline spin bowler in test matches, but he doesn't bowl it, you know. But this is the format where you think you get four or five overs out of Joe bowling some low arm slingy stuff on dirty turning tracks. That's more than adequate. That's absolutely fine. But no one bats an eyelid when he doesn't bowl. Or at least isn't figured into a sort of like a, you know, a shared 10 with say whether it be Livingstone or Moeen or whoever it might be. That's a kind of wild one for me.
I think on Jacks, I think obviously now he's had such a good year and a half, but I think since he's taken that leap forward, England just didn't really have that many opportunities to bet him in. However good he is now, there was never really a proper chance for him to push his case forward.
Well, he'll certainly have plenty of opportunity in the Caribbean tour that's coming up, which you assume he'll have to be on. But then why?
And then
why
he can put his gear away until September.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that Liam Livingstone, age 30, has got a 2-year deal and Will Jacks at 24 hasn't got a deal at all is puzzling. I would personally be surprised if Livingstone's still playing international cricket in 2 years. But the fact he's got a contract probably makes it more likely that he will.
It's more than puzzling. It's utterly bizarre.
Joe, great game for David Willey. Talking of central contracts, the only one of the World Cup squad not to have one, responded really well to that early Rohit takedown. And actually, you know, he's always sort of the not forgotten man, but he doesn't exactly excite England fans, I guess, when his name's on a team sheet. But in an England squad where the basics haven't been done very well this tournament, he did the basics well today.
Really good performance, and you got a feel for him. I still don't understand why the contracts were announced when they were, but for everyone out there to get a deal and you to be the one bloke that hasn't, I mean, Butch, you might have more insight, but to effectively be singled out it's almost kind of like bullying, really. I'm not saying you should be given a contract just to make him feel better, but why announce it at that point?
Yeah.
So it's impressive that he hasn't thrown his toys out of the pram or flounced around. He's obviously thinks he's got a point to prove, but then it feels like David Woody's got a point to prove every time he plays a cricket game. And we had a conversation ourselves where we all kind of admitted we didn't hugely rate him. We all admired his qualities, but didn't think of him as a standout cricketer that we're excited to see. And it always feels like the England select has kind of leaned that way as well, even though his record stands up to scrutiny. And three big wickets today did his job. A lot of others haven't.
Yeah. By the way, England, remarkably, are still not out.
Oh, don't say
so
that.
So if they win all three remaining games and New Zealand lose all three of their remaining games and there's a significant, historic, perhaps, net run rate swing in England's favour, England could still qualify.
No, they can't, Yaz. They can't. Let it go.
But actually, perhaps more pertinently, a bit of news today. It was announced that the eight teams that will be at the 2025 Champions Trophy will be determined by who finishes where in this World Cup. So it's the top seven teams as well as the host Pakistan qualify. So England are rock bottom at the moment. So really do need at least a win, probably two wins to qualify for that. You know, earlier in the tournament, we were identifying that England-Pakistan game being a potential effective quarterfinal. Well, that England-Netherlands game could be an effective
Champions Trophy playoff that no one saw coming. This is bizarre. Seemingly, the ICC is saying this was revealed in 2021, I think, but no one seems to know that was the case.
Other than Shakib.
So Shakib, I think, mentioned it as a kind of incentive for Bangladesh to, you know, they can't qualify, but to win a couple of games to ensure they're in the Champions Trophy. And I think everyone was like, what? And now...
scrambling through them.
Yeah, when was this?
Someone deleted the email and is having to kind of retrieve it from their junk folder. And yeah, it seems that that was always the deal. And England might not make the Champions Trophy.
I mean, that's status-wise, that's huge, isn't it? I mean, again, you know, it feels a little bit as though nobody would mind too much. Do you know what I mean? I think in the grand scheme of things, in this country anyway, given that just the complete lack of interest really shown in 50 over cricket from the top. I'm not talking about the players. That it would seem like, well, you know, if we didn't have to go and do that, then it probably wouldn't be a bad thing. But I mean,
that's
it's terrible, kind of,
isn't it? It
isn't
has
it?
To mean something.
But I'm not saying that that's what they're thinking. But that's how it feels, you know. And so there is really that is something to play for. I mean, that's a huge, huge sort of status shock if you don't make that.
They should be embarrassed if they don't.
Absolutely,
that should be enough of an incentive.
And so there's a reason to kind of get the, you know, because again, at times today it looked as though they kind of, you know, the bags were packed and they were already on the plane in that run chase, which, let's face it, required just a little bit of getting your nut down, didn't it? Get bloody good team, great bowlers, fabulous spell between those two seam bowlers. It was only 230, and nobody really showed the sort of requisite application to try and get the job done, however ugly it might have looked in getting there, but didn't even get close.
Yeah, I find the Champions Trophy thing actually fascinating because as we've been talking about, it's not going to be these players that are going to be at the Champions Trophy if England qualify there in 2 years' time. So they're essentially qualifying for the sake of the next generation. We also talk about there not being that many meaningful ODIs. So the Champions Trophy, halfway through the World Cup cycle, is actually really important.
It was really important to England under Morgan. That was a really important tournament that they looked like they were going to win here and then
lost against Pakistan in the semi-final.
On a tired, warm pitch, and they kind of went into their shells. And that was absolutely a key moment for Morgan and said, this is when we thought we've got to double down in those situations and not go into our shell. So again, we could just be having the same conversation in whenever the next one is. What, 2027?
Yeah.
Well, of course we weren't going to do well in that tournament because we didn't take the run-up seriously. And
it's interesting. I was thinking about Morgs and I was thinking about 2019 World Cup today. I was driving around listening to the radio. And what sort of became crystal clear in my mind was the idea that in the run-up to the home World Cup in 2019 would have been the idea that anything would have come between Owen Morgan and his team getting the right preparation leading up to it. Now, think back to, obviously, the Ashes finished end of July, right? Which was a disgrace. But it was done. And England played no cricket at all through the month of August. We know why. And then played sort of some half-assed September autumnal 50-over games against New Zealand as our sort of sole preparation throughout the English summer for an upcoming World Cup. And I was thinking if the World Cup had been, again, if it had been a home World Cup, a big sort of, you know, showpiece occasion at home, would England have had the sort of like the best months of the summer with pitches that might have been a little bit drier, good weather conditions? Would they have had that month of note with no 50-over cricket in terms of preparation in it at all? And the answer is resoundingly no. That would have been baked in for some proper cricket. And all of this is, you know, wildly in hindsight, and nothing is going to change the performance at the moment. But just that just was no, you didn't have that same sense that all of the I's were dotted and the T's were crossed in the run up to it. There was a lot of hoping it would be all right on the night. And depending upon, you know, the values of the fabulous players that we've got out there at the moment, whose records prior to this sort of have spoken for themselves, the great experience that they have, and hoping that it would all be all right on the night. And that, you know, and the whole thing has been based on hope, you know, our expectation and probably theirs, that it would be all right on the night. It turned out to be all right on the night in the World T20, if you remember. You know, things looked a little bit like all over the place, didn't seem to know what was going on. Joss didn't play a single match out of seven in Pakistan in the run up to the whatever it was. You know, it all just seemed a little bit, oh, last minute, oh, how we won. The same approach, whether by hook or by crook, happened on the way up into this one, and it has not been all right on the night.
Yeah, I mean, they had one series in Asia in the 2 years leading up to the World Cup, and that's when they basically took a B team to Bangladesh. There was an interesting tweet that did the rounds today from at Cricket Jim One, who posted the 11 that played the first game of the New Zealand series in 2015. With the age of each player, and I just sort of forgot how young they were. Roy, 24, Hales, 26, Root, 24, Morgan, 28, Stokes, 24, Butler, 24, Billings, 27, Rashid, 27, Jordan, 26, Plunkett, 30, Finn, 26. So it feels, it could be that the ODI side has a very similar age profile. When the next time they play home ODI, I think, which is in September next year. Just finally, Joe, what do you think England should do for the remaining games in terms of player selection?
I still think they need to pick the team that they think will win matches. I don't think they can just start picking players for the sake of it, to give them a run out.
They haven't got the scope to do that. There's only four guys out of it. I mean, I think Brooke has to play,
right?
There's every reason to say to Ben Stokes, right, go and get whatever you need done, prepare for the India Test Match Series. We don't want to see you between now, you know, until you're ready and fit and ready to lead the team in that. There's no value in him being in the side.
You could potentially argue the same with Mark Wood, who will be vital in that India Test Series. Atkinson could perform a similar role, and
you could make that. You could absolutely make that argument based on his numbers. You know, he's barely taken a wicket and is going at eights. So I mean, you're not losing anything by him not playing. So yeah, absolutely. I would have no issue with that whatsoever. Obviously, fitness allowing, because with only four substitutes from the 11 play today, somebody gets a niggle, you're struggling a little bit anyway. But that's, you know, I think that's just common sense, isn't it? Both of those two blokes will be very, very important for England in that Test Match Series, and will not play, as far as I'm concerned. I cannot see how either of those two play another one-day international for England after this World Cup. And that goes for 90% of the rest of the 11 playing today. So, I mean, from that score, it doesn't matter. The thing that does matter, of course, is trying to win those games in order to try and qualify for the Champions Trophy. So you've got to put the best side you can out there on the park, but leave out players that are kind of not neither here nor there in terms of performance and are more important to you in another theatre.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that Atkinson was a little bit unlucky to be dropped. Obviously, everyone went for mountains of runs against South Africa, but he went for a bit less than most bowlers. Slapped it around the bat and had some fun. And they really, really need some freshness in that side at the moment, more than anything else. And a combination of him and Brooke, would, I think, would bring that.
Just listening to Butch there, just talking about England really need to get their act together to qualify for the Champions Trophy. Just imagine,
I never thought we'd say that line.
Thinking that would be the narrative with 3 days to go.
It's the most important part of the tournament now. Well, I mean, you have to, I suppose, I mean, the other side of it is to try and give people a sort of like a focus for the final three games, isn't it? Because otherwise it's pretty grim. I mean, it's grim anyway, but...
Have we discussed on any of the podcasts yet? And this isn't for now, but has there been a worse defence of a title, world title in sport?
That sounds like a great discussion for the weekly show.
Yeah, but let any listeners tell us what's been a worse world title defence than England's.
It's hard to be worse. Anyway, that's it for today. Tomorrow we've got Afghanistan, Sri Lanka, which is a genuinely really important game. So both sides have got 2 wins after 5 games. So one of them will have 3 after 6, which will take them within 1 win of Australia and New Zealand, who currently occupy positions 3 and 4 in the points table. So should be a really good game. Join us for that at around about the same time tomorrow. Cheers, Mark. Cheers, Joe. We'll see you tomorrow. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Wisden Cricket World Cup Daily Podcast, powered by Seen. Once again, Seen are our video partners on Wisden.com, helping us to deliver a more engaging and immersive viewing experience across mobile, tablet and desktop. Head to the link in the description to find out more about them. Podcast Network.